everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Hair to Camera podcast. I am your host, Marshall, and this is my co-host, Dylan.
Hello, hello.
And today, we're taking a very big look, a surprisingly controversial topic in the 40K community, and maybe just Warhammer community in general. But I think it's controversial for different reasons versus, say, the female custodes. Which we've discussed why it shouldn't be, but however, moving on. if there's anything to be learned about people who are chronically on the internet, it's that anyone will get mad about anything.
Yes, agreed. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So why is 3D printing in 40K a point of contention? You know, it actually is grounded in some genuine concern. It's mainly for game balance and concerns of cheating. So that's a fair thing. So today we'll talk about that, how to get started in 3D printing, places to look at, you know, whatnot, and then how to do so effectively, but also to do so that will allow you to hobby responsibly. We don't like no filthy cheaters in here. We're not into that.
No 2,000 card Yu-Gi-Oh decks in this.
That was less cheating
that
and
stays
more of
outside.
You know, that story was way more less about cheating though, and way more about proving a point.
Yeah, yeah. Well, sometimes people cheat in order to prove a point. You know,
that is
sometimes
true.
They're trying to make a bigger statement.
I don't necessarily know that a 2,000 point Yu-Gi-Oh deck would be cheating in many ways because of how horrid that would be. Mm-hmm. You'd never get the draws you want. But anyway. So let's kind of start off, and start with getting started. There's a lot of starting here. So to start with getting started, there's an obvious statement. You have to get the 3D printer. I know it's really hard concept to work around on the get started.
Yeah. If we're going to talk
this topic,
if we're going to talk about, 3D printing, that is a pretty critical first step is having a 3D printer.
Yes.
Obviously with like, you know, hand drawing or, you know, other artistic works like that, there's usually like an assortment of tools, things that you can start out with, you know,
your own
every,
blood,
every good
example.
Storyboard artist can start out with, oh, I'm just going to ignore that. every good artist can start with just like a piece of paper, you know, a crayon, just a number two pencil, I guess your blood if you have to, you know, you really got nothing else.
If
hanging
you
around.
Have nothing.
But yeah, 3D printing, it seems like, is much more like, no, you have to start with a printer. You gotta, that is
yeah.
your step one.
There just isn't like a thing. But there is obviously then what type of printer, which is no longer as much of like a singular answer thing anymore. You know, it used to be like, all right, just start with a 7-inch build plate resin 3D printer and call it a day. But with the recent advancement in a number of FDM printers that have released in the past year, this is no longer so cut and dry. There's definitely like the, you know, the goods and the bads for both sides, but there's a debate to be had, which is good because obviously that means that there is kind of something for everyone. But the question now really is, what is your printing desires outside of, especially outside of 40K, and what in 40K do you plan to print the most, right? If your number one focus is vehicles, tanks, knights, titans, maybe one is better than the other. But I think first, you know, we should kind of answer the big question, which is, well, why would you want a 3D print in the first place? We've talked about this in previous episodes, but for the standaloneness of this episode,
it's always been in relation to other topics as well, where here we can really just sort of isolate, focus in on like actually answering that question definitively instead of,
yes.
you know, in relation to other aspects of the hobby.
Right. Which it comes with a very direct response of because Games Workshop thinks it somehow is okay to try to promote and get people into a game with an entry level price point of $168, a mid level, so 1,000 point, price standing of $475 and a full game 2,000 points of $1,000. These are all roughly, and obviously these are all MSRP, but that's what Games Workshop would want. They would want you to buy everything new at MSRP, and especially with a fairly full list. And I used very modern priced armies. So my basis was like Sisters, most Space Marines, and that's like not using any discount boxes outside of the Combat Patrol. Because my concept being like you were building up. So if you didn't even get the Combat Patrol, it'd probably be another like $50.
Yeah, certainly.
Even probably more. So that's ridiculous and stupid. And we've talked about the numerous other ways to play this game for far less money than any of those price points. I have a 2,000 point army. I did not spend that amount of money on it. I bought a lot of used models. I did trades. I did things to save money, a lot of it. But that's not what GW wants, right? So how do you kind of fight against that other than what I did, which was going the used model and trading route? You do this, right? Because this is what you would get to. Now, looking at the fact that obviously they have taken, you know, steps, and also not even looking at the fact that they have reportedly had to or pushed shops to kind of keep quiet about selling used models because they're pretty dumb and how they very quickly shut down other STL creators, which we'll get into that realm. But, you know, like GW also does not make it easy for you to get these models locally either. My LGS has just decided within this new year, for example, to no longer sell new GW minis, and a large number of other LGSs are also backing away from new minis because it just isn't feasible. Games Workshop literally does not make it fungible for a local game store to sell their product, which is insane when you think about it, but it's because they're only trying to push you to buy from their website and from their stores, which aren't even very frequent. There's not a whole lot of numbers of GW stores either. So it's like mm-hmm. I think there's two in my state, and I happen to live near one. Yes. But like, I think there's only two. At most there's three, but still, even with that, right? That's an entire state, you know?
Yeah. And there's plenty of states that just straight up don't have them.
Period. Yeah. And I mean, most states in this country are the size of a European country. Like, so one or two and then none is not enough. And then, so obviously, yeah, they're trying to force people almost to do that. But that's, I don't know, that's just how you kill your hobby, IMO. But regardless, moving on, those are obviously the big reasons now that you would want to 3D print. Now, I don't want to get anything kind of twisted a little bit with, you know, people that kind of like GW, because I mentioned the STL thing, you know, where they'll shut down STL creators that they can one way or the other try to harass or prove even that they are, you know, not in a fair use realm, and instead that, you know, that 80% kind of area, and instead are quote unquote ripping them off, right? So, which shouldn't get twisted with, you know, them fighting people who do just post rips and STLs of actual GW models. Obviously, GW has to defend its copyright. There are multiple legal reasons it has to do that. Otherwise, they literally lose the IP.
Yeah, definitely.
But A, that doesn't mean that I'm saying that they're not out there and that you should find them. But what I am saying is that, you know, those are the ones you should expect. But then there's going to be a shift in terms of, and the way that GW does sometimes, maybe not as much anymore. This was maybe a thing kind of early 2020, you know, late like 2019, but between like 19 and 21, right? So in that range, they were going really ham in the like litigation department. And they've really calmed down since, but like obviously there are great examples of STLs out there that, you know, you can use. But the one thing to keep in mind of maybe why not to 3D print a little bit is they're not available to use full 3D printed models in GW tournaments. And if that's something like Adepticon, right? If you wanted to take your stuff there and you have 3D printed models, you can't do that. Like, I will not be able to take my Castigator to Adepticon because they obviously, it's an official tournament. They want you to, you know. So even if it's like a clearly separate thing, like for example, my Dino Riders that I have printed for my Exodite army. But let's get into the actual printer itself. Look, there's reasons. I mean, and to be fair, GW doesn't completely shut down using 3D printed materials in a tournament or whatever. They have the essentially 80% rule as well, like not just copyright, but like where it has to be, if the model is 80% GW plastic, then it is legal for a GW tournament.
Does that rule, the fact that it is kind of this like, it's not like full 100% one way or the other, does that still sort of result in like confusion or issues among like the tournament scene?
It can. That's kind of one of those things where like, that's where like you will bring it up to a TO because, you know, some dude is 100% gonna at some point see that you have a model that has some extra 3D printed bits on it, like a different helmet or a shoulder pad or whatever. And they're gonna be like, because, you know, there's always tournament people that are like that, you know, they're going to try to get their free win when they can get their free win. So, you know, obviously at some point it would have to be noted and looked at and whatnot. But it's one of those things, right, where if you can kind of justifiably state like this is pretty much 80%. So obviously a vast majority of the model is clearly, you know, this is a normal space marine. All I've changed is the head and the weapon so that it looks more Blood Angel-y, you know, like something like that.
Yeah.
They'll let that through because that's, again, in that 80%. They're not trying to fully shut down creativity. They're just trying to make a profit, right? That's kind of the thing.
Right.
And obviously take that as you will, but they're a company in America. That's, or, well, in technically England, but they operate in America, and even operating England is still, in America. England is just as capitalist as we are. Let's be real. So regardless, if you wish to print, what are the printers? Right there, I talked about them a little bit. We can get into it deeper now. So the first one we'll talk about, because it's the one that's been the most kind of stood in for, especially a lot of miniature printing, is the resin printer. It's the type I have, and it is the most commonly used, as I mentioned. But these use a chemical called resin. I know, it's a shocking concept. So, and these printers work by, you fill the tank with resin, and there's, you know, a little tray that goes into them. And then it will lower a plate to the very bottom of the tank to start, right? It will start almost at like a zero distance between the film that the tank has and then a screen that's at the base just below the tank. So the tank has like this very thin, clear film at the bottom of it. And that screen emits UV light to harden the resin in the location layer by layer. And then it builds it up. So it does it from the bottom up like any printer would, but it will hang upside down from the plate. So visually, it feels like it's printing it upside down from what you like are very used to probably seeing in videos of the FDM printer where it like builds it up. It's doing the same thing. It's just flipped. But it's because it's building it from the screen rather than like a nozzle.
How do you handle the resin before putting it into the tank? Like, does it come in like a bottle or like a case? Like, how is it packaged?
Yes, it just comes right in a bottle. I'll talk a little bit about the handling of resin in general in a second, mm-hmm. because it is a very toxic material.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it just goes right from the bottle into the tank. When you're done with it, the recommended thing to do is, if you're not like me and you like always fill it to like the minimum amount you need, which has burned me once, but it's just the way I am. I'm sorry.
It happens.
But if you're not like me and you fill it up all the way when you start each print, then what you would do is you would, and most like, and these are easy to get, you would get these like filtered paper funnel things to either put in a funnel or to funnel it itself. And then you would funnel it into a separate bottle that would be your like usable but technically used resin. So like it's filtered out, and the filter obviously prevents any actual like contaminated or, you know, cured resin or like, you know, hard resin bits from getting into that bottle. And then you can just start with that bottle and then use whatever else you have left, you know, just to kind of make sure you're not like wasting anything. But anyway, yes. So resin is the most popular for miniature painting. And that is generally been and always and still is the fact that their prints have the highest detail. You can get a lot of the really small bits and like the, you know, the tiny details that you can see on like a lot of like GW models, for example, or just even like if you get really fancy, look at and see really fancy STLs, they will have a lot of those small details, especially in like armor or if you add little bits on the STL itself. The resin will more clearly print that detail without it maybe melting over and kind of getting stuck to each other. Because this junk comes from the fact that an FDM printer has to use a sized nozzle, right? It's got to squeeze like a toothpaste. It's got to just squeeze this melted molten plastic, you know, and draw out the thing. Well, if the detail is really tiny and the nozzle isn't small enough, then you will get, you know, it'll just kind of melt together into a goo and doesn't really like show like this is a skull or this is a, you know, a purity seal. It just looks like a blob that you slapped onto the shoulder pad. But a resin printer will get that because it's essentially like flash, you know, and it's not really flash, but like, you know, it's almost like when you flash freeze something where it could just like stay still in that moment. It's kind of doing that layer by layer. It's just like flash heating and like setting the resin layer by layer by layer.
Does the resin absorb? Like, is it a porous enough material that like you need to do more coats when painting it? Or is the process of painting it about the same as with your existing plastic minis?
It is pretty much the same. I had an issue with a Charmander ornament that I printed around Christmas. And when I tried to prime it, and I think it was more an issue with the primer rather than the model, but it did get a little runny. And the reason I say that is because when I primed and painted my my Warlock, Skyrunner, Proxy, and my other Exodite proxy, the name is escaping me. They took the black primer I used with them just fine. So I think maybe it was something that my white primer was dealing with. It might have been a temp issue with the can. So I as far as I've been able to tell and use, the resin generally is just like normal. Like it's just like using a GW mini or something like that. I've never had any type of issue with it. Yeah. That was my only weird thing, and I felt like it was notable because maybe it could have been because of the resin, but as far as I know, and it's not the case, because essentially it's one out of three that I've primed so far and will not be the last. Because I've printed a number of things, I have not painted them yet. The other big thing about resin printers is the reason also they get a lot of detail is because that screen that like is potentially like a 7 to 10 inch screen, that'll be really high resolution. Like it'll be like minus 9K for a 7 inch display. So it gets the pixel lining for like when it freezes and essentially draws each layer is obviously like very fine. There's no like aliasing or whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's also what helps it be very detailed. Resin printers also have a very positive reputation for being faster or shorter print times compared to FDM. They also end up generally being less susceptible to things like misalignment or temp issues, you know, and things that can run FDM printers can run into, where they'll just be printing and they'll be going just fine. And all of a sudden they're just, it's just like, the plate went off. Sorry. We're done. you got to throw everything out. That doesn't really happen nearly as often in the case of resin. And if it does, it's only just because maybe something is loose, which technically could be the case with FDM, but I've seen plenty of FDMs fail for that reason, though I'm willing to imagine that is generally less of an issue now than it was maybe when I used to see that happen more frequently, when especially they were like, the printers were still pretty like newish. They weren't advancing as fast.
Right. They've had time to make improvements to them now that it's something that's been on the market for a few years now.
Right. The primary downside is a large one about resin, and that, as we've alluded to, is extremely toxic, and it cannot be treated, you know, haphazardly or lightly. Printing with resin needs to be done in a separate, well-ventilated room or area. You need to handle it with gloves and wearing a mask, especially when it's like in the air for some time, like when you're cleaning out the tank. Look, I've done it. We've all done it. You've poured it and then put the lid on right away. You'll be fine. But like, especially when you're cleaning it or you have it open for a really long time, maybe even kind of when you are washing the model, which I'll get to in a second. Those are maybe times where you would want to have it, because that, especially with how, depending on how much you printed, you know, the actual like freshly printed model could still kind of exude some fumes, you know, and this could just be like the normal mask. Like, it doesn't have to be like the gas mask. If it's like what we like wore during the, you know, of like for the multi-year illness and any other time that maybe you get sick nowadays, like any of those masks are just fine, you know. Like, it doesn't have to be like the super high grade filter or gas mask. Like, it doesn't have to be that.
No,
it's
you,
not that.
Just a standard N95, something that you can get at most.
Or even just like
now,
the flat one you can get. Yeah. Like, you just get like by walking into a hospital or something.
Yeah. You don't got to show up with like a welder's mask.
No.
You know,
yeah.
Ready
exactly
to go.
And then when the, like, as I alluded to, when the model's done printing, you know, after you've maybe taken off the supports or whatnot, it has to be washed with either alcohol or water, but water only if it is specifically a water washable resin, which they are not. You need to make sure it's labeled that.
Okay.
And then it must be cured either by leaving it in the sun for usually like 8 hours, like if it's direct sunlight, like between 4 and 8 hours, depending on how direct the sunlight is. Or if you have a UV lighter curing machine, 1 to 5 minutes. The sun is unfortunately way less efficient.
Okay.
Regardless, essentially up until it has gone through that curing step, you'll need to be wearing the gloves. Because like once it's cured, you can touch it. You can lick it. Don't swallow it, but you can put it in your mouth.
I feel like it's important to say probably don't immediately jump to those actions, even if you technically can. You know?
Yeah, sure. But like,
don't make
like
a habit out of it, you know?
Yeah. But like a good example is like resin is often used in dental, in dental like proxies or tests or whatever, or even like replacements, right? Like there are things that get put into your mouth for long periods of time that are made from 3D printed resin, right? Once it has cured, it is very safe material. It's just that what you need that step.
Yeah.
So the other downside is that depending on the type of resin you use, resin always is going to be way more fragile compared to FDM and especially GW plastic. I at one point dropped that Dino Rider Farseer a Skyrunner proxy that I had when I was painting it, and it just shattered into bits. And that was not using like tough resin. So I do use, though, it's this Nova 3D water washable tough resin. And I have found it to actually be pretty dang resilient. I've dropped it a number of times. It's not immune from breaking, especially at any glue lines. In fact, there will be a video that will play, which is me doing a drop test to kind of exemplify it. And granted, I'm not dropping it from like all the way up on my ceiling. I'm simulating about the size of like a desk drop, you know? And it pretty much lasted. The only things that actually broke off was like the head. But again, that was a glue area, right? So really what broke was the glue.
Yeah.
So I actually really do recommend this this resin. It's really treated me well. It's worked very well. I've had very little print issues. I only had a few on my Castigator print, but I think honestly part of that also just kind of comes from the way my settings were. So I think regardless, you can make it work. It has been a very good resin for me to use from the jump. Otherwise, let's get to FDM printers, because that was a lot about resin. This will be actually a lot shorter because they're pretty cut and dry. So obviously the FDM printers are known to be the most beginner friendly type of printer. They have come a long way in the last couple of years. In no small part is this due a lot of, especially some newcomers or some that have brought some strong things to the table, like Bamboo Lab printers, bringing this conversation to the table for minis. I'll talk about Bamboo Labs in a second. Wait. Anyway, they were kind of one of the first ones to do that, and to at least draw my attention, and I think a lot of other people's attention. I shouldn't say they were the first, but they were one of the biggest ones to bring it to people's attention. Because otherwise, in 40K, FDM printers were generally reserved for making tanks, large and titanic models, you know, stuff that doesn't really need a crazy amount of fine detail. Like a dreadnought might have some bits on it, but you can kind of, if it's not perfect, honestly, you're generally going to be fine because it's still big enough where it'll get the detail pretty much okay, you know, right? Like where you need it to be. However, as I kind of mentioned, over the last couple of years, we've seen FDM printers and by multiple makers now bring a quality that maybe doesn't equal equal the detail of resin printers, but definitely rivals it in the sense of whether or not something is maybe a better value or purchase for you. As I mentioned, these are also beginner friendly, so you don't need to, in the sense that you don't have to worry about, you know, where the printer is. They're, you know, it's not a toxic chemical. It's just FDM. It's a very safe and, you know, workable type of filament, you know, or plastic, I guess. You know, so you don't really need to be worried about where you put it. You know, it can sit next to you on your desk. It can be, you know, on a kitchen table. Wherever you have the place for it, you can put it somewhere. And you don't really got to worry about any type of things. It is also, as I noted in the previous part, it tends to be tougher and kind of cheaper per print, if you will, than resin. There's probably some debate on that and conjecture to work with, but as far as I've gathered, that seems to be the case. Like I said, both generally do fine in that regard. It's not that, like, price per print, if you will, or like how much material you're using in a print and whatever, not really something to worry about. However, like I said, the detail is absolutely not equal. And throughout this FDM section, I've probably played a lot of video from videos done by the creator Once on a Six Side. And in my opinion, he's shown a lot of great proof at how great an FDM miniature can look. And especially, like, you know, because there's a bit of a learning curve, but like once you can get the detail right, honestly, they'd be good for pretty much anyone. You know, anybody that doesn't sweat these like ultra fine details of, especially like printing, like if your goal is just to play the game and get an army onto the table, an FDM printer will work amazingly for you. So that's it. The detail is not something I feel like people should sweat if you're just trying to play the game. because you're not going to do like a, you shouldn't do like golden demon level paint jobs for all your army, like for your entire army anyway.
Right, right.
But even, but like once you can get even an FDM printed, miniature printed, honestly, most people probably won't notice the difference. You know, unless again, they like pull it real close. Okay, otherwise we'll get into some printers of note and here's where that thing will come in. So we'll start with the resin printer that I have, which is the Elegoo Mars 4. Elegoo printers are often recommended for people who want to do miniature printing and want to do resin. They have a decent reputation for customer service and reliability. I've had no issues since having mine. And I've, you know, most 3D printers at some point will go on sale like I did, like mine did for Black Friday. Any cubic printers, though, are another common one you will see for resin. They, I mean, both of these companies do make FDM printers. I will make note. I know nothing of them, though. So that's why I'm not talking about them.
Yeah.
And but for any cubic resin printers, I have seen mixed reviews on their reliability and customer service. But I've also seen plenty of people who have them, you know, and like between creators and just people who make videos showing like, here's some stuff, who like aren't big people. And so clearly aren't getting that, you know, didn't get that from a sponsorship deal. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, I also see any cubics wash and cure machines a lot in people's videos as well. So those, if anything, are maybe worth a look too. And so depending on the sale and how much you're getting it for, any cubic is probably just fine. Otherwise, for FDM, the what would have been the absolute recommendation would have been the Bamboo Lab A1 Mini as like a or the A1, right? As like a strong standing point. As I mentioned in the first two videos that he did, once on a six side, used these in their videos and they looked great. The Terminators came out really cool. And I saw a lot afterward, you know, I saw a lot of other people posting and showing great reviews for these. However, there's been some controversy as some late with Bamboo Lab, as they have now instituted essentially a technical DRM factor for their printers. Essentially, is you have to keep it updated in order to use it, is the main crux of what I have gathered is the thing they're doing. There's some aspect maybe on like if this is also including like, you know, terms of service that it could, you know, include selling data, stuff like that. I don't know that. That part is conjecture I have heard. The main thing I know is that if you don't update the quote unquote security updates, your printer is bricked, essentially. Obviously it turned on, but you have to, yeah, it has to at some point, if it essentially detects an update or that it needs an update, it will not print until you update it. So I'm not here to throw my uninformed hat into that ring of whether or not you should get it, how you should feel about it. I'm just denoting that as a thing. Because when I wrote this script, I was like, 100% recommendation. And obviously then this came out this week of this recording. So I was like, well, now I got to deal with this. So do your research, make your own opinions. If you care about it, make your own decision. They are technically though, from a technical standpoint, they do great work. They're awesome printers as just printers. Like, right. The work they do the job well. Everything else outstanding, your decision. Do your homework. Otherwise, I've also seen the company Flashforge. I don't remember what the model number was, but they have seemingly a good number of printers, especially maybe some that are maybe a little bit more on the higher end. Kind of as I've alluded to, though, I'm a bit more uninformed about many of the other FDM printers. And there, I'm sure there are a number of great makers out there as well. And as I've alluded to, because I've mentioned these videos twice now, go check out Once on a Six Sides videos about this stuff. He's way better about getting into the nitty gritty about all of these prints. If you want to learn even more about 3D printing after this episode, he's a great person to go to, and his channel will be linked in the description. So obviously we've gone through all the, you know, reasons maybe you would want to print, how to get started. Let's get into a little bit on what are some of the places that you can look. You know, obviously there are a great number of options out there. How well the person decides to set their STLs up for you, and whether and like how technically legal they may or may not be, is honestly probably dependent on what website you go on. So one of the big ones to look at to start off with is myminifactory.com. They are going to have the greatest number of especially very original STLs, generally going to be safe studios that you don't need to really worry about potentially like losing all of their models by the time, you know, in the future, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's where you can also, it's a, for example, though, it's also a great place where you can find like official Trench Crusade miniatures and other stuff and, you know, good proxies that fit that like fair use 80% kind of rule thing. So it is definitely a, My Mini Forge is a, definitely a, like a great place to start off with, especially for like getting inspired and wanting to look into maybe what are the things that you can do. For even just various hobbies, not even just Warhammer itself. Otherwise, there is technically, I would say like this would be kind of potentially number two, depending on the scenario. But Cults 3D is another good option. You can find another great sets for interesting proxies, bits, so that you can actually just, you know, instead of maybe making the full model, you can do something similar. Like, I would say it's not as refined, at least the website search setting, I wouldn't call as refined as My Mini Factory, but it's a good second place, right? It's also a great place to be, it's also a great place to get free STLs. So another kind of good toe dip kind of website. Otherwise, one of the most common ones you'll see, especially for free stuff, is Thingiverse. Thingiverse, though, will have kind of everything in it, so you may not necessarily get stuff for your RPG or war game kind of STLs. You'll have to do a lot more sifting and a lot more work to kind of get knowledge on it. And then there are people that do sell their STLs on Etsy. As far as I have learned, Etsy is also where you go to maybe potentially purchase and download type STLs that maybe are not ones that will, or ones that might get in trouble with Games Workshop at some point.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm just saying they're there. It's Etsy's fault, not mine. And then obviously there are studios that have their own websites that you can go to find, you can, there are those who have their own studios that you can go to and you can find the models and the STLs and get them directly from the creator source without going to any of these third-party websites or like marketplaces. But obviously I want to acknowledge that these marketplaces exist because I do like, especially I use My Mini Factory quite frequently. But you may now be asking, this all sounds pretty cool. What's the problem here? Let me tell you. I don't know if that was like inherently a funny joke at all. I just kind of titled it that.
I can't imagine anything could be inherently wrong with it, you know?
You know, I don't think, honestly, I think the people that maybe do get concerned or are a little bit anti-3D printer in the Warhammer hobby, I don't think they necessarily do it just because they just hate 3D printing. I mean, I'm sure there are plenty of people that are like, no, the only thing that's good is the official stuff, and that's all I like. That's all that's good. Blah, blah, blah. you know,
the
you
sanctity
should,
of the Warhammer
company,
figurines
you'll destroy,
is above
you'll
all
destroy
else.
The company. Yes, you'll destroy
we
the
need
company.
To keep the plastics pure.
You know, but the reality is that 3D printing has so many crazy upsides. It's, if anything that you should take from this video is that you should heavily consider getting one for yourself or working with a friend to get a printer slash maybe if you have a friend that already has one, you know, get them a bottle of resin or filament or a thing of filament and be like, hey, help me print some stuff, you know, because there is a lot that can be gained from it. But when you think about it, the reality is that when you add a lot of creativity into what is inherently a competitive game, you know, a game where it is you versus an opponent, then there is room, where there is creativity, then there is room to cheat. And as we've talked about sweat lords already, those sweat lords, they'll find a way. So the concept of using, as I've kind of mentioned, a custom model is like a proxy, right? Because you are saying, you know, this dinosaur rider model is a proxy and it is meant to represent a Farseer or a Warlock Skyrunner. I said Farseer earlier, it's meant to be a Warlock. Either way. The reality, though, is that if your proxy is close enough, you know, most people could probably tell, yeah, I could tell it's probably, yeah, like a Warlock. You know, if it's a Xenos, they might be confused if it's a Warlock or a Farseer, which is a valid, would maybe be a valid question. Mm-hmm. You know, but like, you may not be like, oh, maybe, but like, some of the changes that you make couldn't be seen as clear advantages. The main example of that is in bases, because the main, one of the big functions of 40K is where your base is. So the main cheating way will be is if you, especially you print your bases smaller than that of the normal model. So for example, you know, if a Space Marine is usually on a 35 millimeter base, if you find a way to 3D print one and you shrink it down and suddenly it's on a 25 millimeter base, technically per the rules, that Space Marine, even though its body will extend past the cover, because its base isn't, it is still technically in full cover, right? And that's a big thing. You are then making yourself harder to hit and therefore cheating because you made this space smaller. You know, your movement maybe would have put you, you know, to stay in coherency with your squad, that Space Marine maybe would have had to go to the back, right? Or would have had to come out from that cover more. But now because your bases are smaller, now you can do so. Stuff like that, right? While bigger bases are generally considered to be worse for a character or model, just in general, like even a unit, like an infantry unit, you know, a bigger base technically would be seen as a detriment because obviously that means that you cannot fit in that cover as well, right? You will have more, you are more likely to have some type of overhang to that cover. And I haven't done all the math on this, but it could technically grant you easier movement in certain circumstances or to specifically maybe get you into an engagement range maybe sooner than you would have previously. So especially if maybe you're, this model is a melee focused model or, you know, and whatnot, and then it's an oversized base, that charge might be potentially a little bit easier, especially maybe depending on how your positioning and like moving around the board would work. Maybe in the scenario where, you know, you, because you're smaller, you might have to take a different angle because you're bigger. Technically that base will have a little bit more reach to the, like the left than maybe it would if you were, say, with a smaller model. So like I said, I'm not, I haven't done all the math to technically prove this, but it is a possibility. Either way, it's never good to change your base size. It's not a good look.
Right.
It's currently, I'm in a weird spot right now because I know for, I'm like, I've mentioned this a number of times. I have a strong theory and belief that the Drukhari are going to get some form of revamp of their range either within this year or the next edition, right? And My concern with that is I got a homunculus proxy. I'm not a fan of the current available homunculus. It's still in their fine cast resin model. Just looks ugly to me and I don't like it. And I found a really cool homunculus model. By the way, a lot of my models that I'll be showing in this video are going to be from Fantasy Cult Miniatures, and they have really cool stuff. So I want to give them a shout out, obviously. But either way, you know, this is a very cool homunculus. This homunculus looked a lot cooler to me, but it doesn't print with a base. And now I can obviously just get a base STL or a slew of base STLs. The problem is, I don't know, like many other character models in the Eldari range, if it's also going to get a base size boost. And because it's 3D printed, I can't use the it's an old model, so it has an old base argument.
Oh, sure.
Because if it's just a model you had for years and it's on a smaller base, people will give you the pass. Because it can be really annoying with especially old models that they use the type of basing where like there's like the slit in the base and you like insert the model, like the model has like a stand bit that you like glue into that slit.
Yeah, like a standy type thing where you kind of wedge it in. Yep.
Yeah. A lot of those have that. So it's really annoying to change the base sometimes, depending on the model, but it can be. Especially then if you have based said model and you have a bunch of decorations, then it's really annoying and potentially kind of heartbreaking to have to pull it off the base. You know, so a lot of times you'll get the pass, right? If it's an old model, if it's clearly an old model, but it's technically a legal model, then you'll get the pass because it's like, well, you're not explicitly cheating, as far as I can tell, not in a way that I can prove. But if in the case of a 3D printer, I don't have that excuse because technically I could just rip it off a base and put it on a new one. So I'm trying to think if I need to like predict if it's going to get the base upgrade or not. And I'm thinking I am just going to make that prediction and just go for it, but I'm not 100% sure. Otherwise, the changing of the model size itself and like the position of it, you know, irrespective of the base can also kind of be seen as cheating, because even if maybe you have some line of sight aspect, or maybe, you know, one of the things, for example, in the game is if you're completely obscured by terrain, then you can't be seen. It's not just like you get the benefit of full cover, but that you can just be seen, right? You maybe have to get like up, because line of sight's a very obviously, as I mentioned, like an important thing. Well, if you make, say, your model smaller, so like the GW model over the same terrain would go over that and it would be visible to a sniper on a building, right? Or a unit just up on a building or a scaffolding, right? If it was a normal GW model, it would be seen over this wall. But if you print one that technically is a bit smaller, someone could accuse you of cheating, because instead of having line of sight, and yes, you would have full cover privileges, you could still be shot at. But now, because it's not, because it's a different shape and size, someone could be like, well, now I can't hit this because your stupid model isn't viewable. And again, whether or not that's justified maybe is a question, but like that is an argument that very likely could be made against you, right? Somebody could make this argument. It's specifically just like those are the things you kind of need to think about sometimes. And if anything, you know, it is always maybe a good thing to note, like if you're looking at an STL, if it's bigger than the normal model, then you're not likely going to get a cheating accusation, because one way or another, that thing is probably going to be easier to hit. Yeah. Like all my dinosaur proxies for like Wind Riders and the Farseer and the Warlock Skyrunner, they're definitely bigger than the normal, you know, like jet bike unit that the Eldari have. So one way or the other, they're getting shot the fuck up. They're going to get blown off the board at some point.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they have my dinosaurs, so that makes me happy. And if you're playing casual games, yeah. And honestly, if you're playing casual, you'll generally be fine. Don't worry about it too much. This is mostly, but this is a thing to be aware of. Otherwise, then it's just potential WYSIWYG things, you know, with like weapons and extra stuff. You know, like this is incredibly dependent, obviously, on not just like the group or like what your data sheet has. And there's a lot of factors to this aspect. I'm not going to spend too much time on it. But like, for example, if the only weapons on the data sheet are a chainsword and a power sword, and, you know, your model has like a chain partisan, in that scenario, like you could say, well, it's a chain partisan. So like, obviously there isn't a partisan on the character sheet, but it's a chain weapon. So it's going to use the chain sword because it clearly doesn't look like a power weapon, you know. But if you're like trying to make it look like, you know, like a Xenos weapon that the Marine is carrying or has, and it could be mistaken for either a power sword or for, you know, the, you know, if it does have access to like the kind of spear partisan weapon, I forget its name all the time, that like the custodians use, for example, then you could run into some points where like maybe somebody's trying to be like, are you sure that's what that is? Like, but the thing that's important, like WYSIWYG always is to always just keep honest with your opponent. You know, whether it's a proxy or a GW model, just be honest with your opponent about what your models have and their war gear. And if anything, you know, make it, you know, make a note of it, like have it available on a note so that they know, like, hey, this unit has this. This unit has this, right? Like, you can give them a small copy that just maybe is a short breakdown of weird proxy weapons, that what they are. And that way they can quickly recognize it. But that's kind of the thing in general with anything, right? It's just be honest and fair with your opponent and you won't run into problems. The final note that I know some people get turned off or maybe are hesitant to start 3D printing is GW design. And I don't mean that from like specifically just the sense of like GW designs the game to make 3D printing difficult. They don't really. Just the community does, or their like tournament rules. No, but what I mean is like, let's look at me, for example. This is a good me versus you scenario, right?
Okay.
I started learning about Warhammer 40K. In like 2000, I want to say like 2000, I think 2006.
God, a lifetime ago.
Yeah. Almost. Oh God, almost 20 years ago.
Oh yeah. There could be people listening to this podcast that are like that weren't full alive. Adults that weren't alive.
My beard got grayer.
Don't worry about it. The Emperor provides. It's fine.
But anyway, you know, and that's when I started to learn a little bit about stories and some lore bits. And I specifically played Dawn of War. And because of that, I got really attached. You know, I've always had a deep attachment to the design and the look of a Space Marine, right? It's just...
sure.
I think in my head of a Space Marine, I think of what GW puts on the box, right?
Yeah, right.
And when I like look at STLs and stuff, you know, like when people come out with like Space Marine proxies that like are pretty noticeably different looking, you know, to the GW style, I'm really not into it. It's just not my thing. I don't want to print them. I don't want to make them. It's just not for me because I'm too sentimentally attached to the design of a number of GW things. And as I mentioned in the previous episode, that is not explicit go to all things, but like the two things, for example, I would say I'm most attached to are the design of Sisters and the design of Space Marines. But like, cause like, for example, with the Imperial Guard, from a lore standpoint, there is like just thousands of types of guard with their own unique, you know, uniforms, weapon formats. Maybe the las guns are the same technically, but you know, like ways they make their walkers, their tanks, like changes they make or design differences or whatever, right? Because there are so many planets out there. So like that maybe is one example then where like you can, you know, maybe you can spread out, but still have an attachment to like the Cadian design or the Kree design. But, you know, like for me, like with Space Marines, it's a really hard like no go. Tau actually is another one. Tau is my like other one where I'm like, I find it really hard because I really liked the Tau when I was especially like a kid playing Dawn of War. I really like the Tau because again, yeah, they had the mech suits. Now I have kind of a really good attachment to the Tau design. And granted, the Tau design is maybe something a little bit easier to proxy and get kind of close without breaking copyright law. But when they do, break the mold, I can tell, and I'm not as into it. Versus maybe someone like you, who has just started to learn the game, just started to learn the lore, who has just started to learn the designs, the hobby. Maybe you aren't as attached to any of the specific designs. You know, maybe you could look at a Space Marine with, you know, a samurai aesthetic to its armor and be like, that's cool. I want to print those. I want that to be my Space Marine army design, because you just don't have the same sentimental attachment. And others like you may very well be in the same boat. What is kind of your feelings on like the GW design? Like, if you had a printer right now and like it was going to, you know, obviously with that, you know, you could potentially print a full, you know, obviously 2000 point army for far less than you would ever do for GW. You know, like, would you, when you look for those models, right, would you care about if they look like the Taos that you have learned about now? Or are you cool to just like experiment, look around?
That's a really interesting question, actually, because I definitely agree that the GW designs and like a lot of their art and that there is a very iconic feel. I mirror that sentiment that like when you think of a Space Marine, there is an incredibly specific vision for what a Space Marine looks like, even with the variations in their armor and their weapons and things like that. There is still, it makes me think of something like the Spartans in Halo, where they have this really particular design to them. And then as time went on, they started to kind of futz around with that a little bit. So it was like they didn't all look like Master Chief, you know. You would see Spartans in like Reach and stuff like that that, you know, had different colors, but also their helmet designs were a little different. They were
kind of bulkier.
Their body types in general. Yes, exactly. You had some bulkier armor designs. And they were kind of dancing around sort of this idea that we had of like what a Spartan looks like, and they would make slight changes to it without ever fully going away from that feeling. It also makes me think of like the Ultra Beasts in the Pokemon series that were introduced in like Sun and Moon, which were really interesting because they hit a point of like, we've created these Pokemon designs that we're defining them as Pokemon, but they don't, they truly genuinely don't look like Pokemon. And I think that works because they are meant to be almost alien like, you know, they're not meant to be
they're from a different universe.
Pokemon. Yeah. They're not meant to be the type of thing that you're just going to find out in the wild on like Route 8 or whatever. But they do also, I think for a lot of outsiders or like people that have been away from the series for a while, you know, they see something like that and they go, what the hell is that? How is that even a Pokemon? You know, wait, is this like fan art? You know, like, because they're just
why
radically
does this
different.
Bug look buff?
This beef bug with his sick gains. it just looks so radically different from the sort of the base idea of what we expect the Pokemon to look like. So coming back to Warhammer, and it's like, it's in my hands as far as creating my own models, like printing out my own models from existing designs. I think for me, the fact that I am not as invested, that I've not been in the Warhammer hobby for as long as you have, you know, I don't have that major attachment to it yet. I can look at a Space Marine and I can definitively say, like, that looks like a Space Marine, that doesn't. But in terms of like how much I'm actually concerned about adhering to that, maybe not as much. If I'm like printing out my own model kits and the Space Marine designs that I'm using maybe aren't, you know, maybe the helmets don't look quite the same. Maybe the eyes aren't quite right, or the shoulders maybe have a little bit of a different shape going on. I don't think I'm going to be as concerned about it unless I am very intent on matching like a particular art style or something that I've seen from like a Warhammer book or like a rule book, you know, and I'm like, I very specifically want to match that art style. If I'm not chasing after that, then I'm not really going to be too concerned with it. And I think it just comes down to, it's not something that I am like deeply, deeply personally invested in yet.
Yeah. And I think like you bringing up the Halo thing is actually honestly like a really good point, because like, you know, for, you know, years, all the only Spartan we had. So like, and like every Spartan in multiplayer, you know, was,
it was just Master Chief.
It's just, yeah, different colors. Reskinned, colored, yeah, Master Chief. You know, the same Master Chief they put in the show.
It was like Halo 2 and 3, where we actually started getting like slight variations on the armor, like selectable options.
But yeah, which
even
really,
then, it still wasn't like radically different.
Yeah, like with 2, all they did was change it from the Mark 5 to Mark 6. Mm-hmm. And then 3 gave us like the new helmets and shoulder pads, which was good, but like obviously the body shape, it was still essentially a like Master Chief's build.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, and I think, you know, it's funny because I looked at, because for me, you know, I was attached to that design with Halo, but then Halo Reach came out and I was excited. You know, I looked at that and I was like, hell yeah, more types of Spartans. That's sick. You know, like, I think they look cool, you know, but, and then like, you know, it's, which was just funny to me. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because like, you know, the Halo is most attached to was 3. You know, like, but like the reality was still that like, you know, the, where you got that customization. So maybe it wasn't like as strictly attached to the design. I think it would have been like different if it was like, if they were like, here's Master Chief in a, you know, now Master Chief wears this armor and it's like, you know, it's like a really thick shoulder pad, a recon helmet, you know, like it looked like a Halo 3, like custom Spartan. And it was like, no, that's Master Chief. And I'd be like, excuse the fuck out of me. But
even,
you know, like I don't look into multiplayer and I freak out, you know?
Yeah. How familiar are you with like the Dead or Alive series?
Oh, decently.
The fighting game Dead or Alive.
Yeah. Yeah. I played it a bit, but not a crazy amount.
Dead or Alive 4 had a character that they introduced named Nicole, also known as Spartan 458. She is a Spartan. She's like a non-canonical Spartan, who they later like integrated into, I think, some of the books in that. But she shows up as this Spartan character, and she is like the epitome of not Master Chief. And what I mean by that is like in the ironic sense, like if you look at her model, her armor, she is clear, like there's slight differences, but she is clearly meant to look near exactly like Master Chief specifically. You know, she's not, she doesn't have like the helmets, like the different helmet that you would see on like some of the other characters that were introduced in like Halo Reach and that. Like she looks near identical to Master Chief.
Yeah, I'm gonna tell you what, but I'm looking at these pictures and they look like Master Chief.
It's very hard. If you're not somebody who's heavily into Halo, like it's, you're going to look at that and be like, oh, that's Master Chief. That's just Master Chief.
I kind of am just looking at this and saying that's just Master Chief. Like Like, obviously, I'm trying to pick ones that I know are correct, but, like, if I go on, like, the wiki page, it's just, like, that's just straight up Master Chief. Like, they're just... Yeah.
I don't know how this is. It is basically almost exactly, like, I think it's, like, Mark VI Mjolnir armor or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's, like, they went to the trouble of, they're, like, we're going to introduce a Halo character, but it's not going to be Master Chief. She's going to have a different name, different designation, but we're going to make her look literally exactly like Master Chief, to the point where it is almost, you know, her being a different person from John 117 is almost like unimportant, because it is in looks, it is nearly identical.
I was kind of reading a little bit. I got distracted a little bit by like the, it's easy. It showed up on Halopedia
because it's such a like interesting, weird thing that you kind of forget that it happened. Cause I remember distinctly when it was announced, like when she was first shown, and it was such a like huge deal among people of like, oh, they added Master Chief, but they didn't. It's not Master Chief, but it looks just like him. And like, it was such a interesting thing to go down. But the reason that I bring it up is because I think it's one of those things where it was like they had the opportunity to really step away and do something different, but they went with the route of like, this is the iconic design, this is what everybody is going to know and going to recognize, and we're adding this character in because we want to get people that play Halo who and love Halo to try out Dead or Alive 4.
Right.
And with like my perspective of like, if I'm printing out armies, you know, if I'm doing my own printing and stuff like that, I'm obviously not going to be coming at it from the same perspective. I'm not looking at it as like, I need to, you know, I need my models to be 100% to the letter, to the designs that Game Workshop has done and has established. Like, I'm okay with it actually being a little bit different because I'm not... It's all for me. I'm doing it for me. I'm not trying to get other people in. I'm not trying to buy other people into that specific design. I can kind of tinker around with it because I'm doing it for myself.
Right. And I think that's honestly, I think that's the best mindset to go into it with, because I mean, honestly, it affords you way more freedom. Mm-hmm. That being said, I think to me still, like, I think while I can be pushed, you know, like, into a fairly, like, creative and very non-similar realm, I think I would still want it to have, like, those reflections, though, of, like, what it is that, you know, the model, the original model or, like, character or whatever has, right? Like... For example, I think like a good example maybe is like the Ghost Keel battle suit, right? Where it has a very defined shape. And honest, but it's not one that I don't think anybody could make a mech shape that is relatively similar but still unique, right? Like, I look at this and I'm like, this probably isn't even the most original shape of a mech in general.
Yeah.
You know, but like, as long as like I can find where like the shades are there, like if it was a Tau model, for example, right? As long as it's maybe somewhere where like the shades of what it is based on exist. So like, for example, the Exodites, the reason I chose them was because even though they ride, you know, they have these dinosaurs and whatever, you know, and the armor is not exactly the same. You know, and like the helmets don't have like the very class, the helmets, for example, don't have the like kind of classic like Eldar face on them, like helmet face. They just kind of have these like blank visor face, like helmet designs. It's that realm where like I see the like, you know, the silhouette, right? The silhouette is the same. Or it feels the same, right? And so to me, it's like, yeah, I'm good with that, right? I can get my bit where it's like, I feel like this is something I could put in the lore of the universe. But it's different enough where it's like, yeah, this is still very unique and on its own, you know? But yeah, I think the benefit that's always, that was kind of my thing for 3D printing for a long time, was that like way of thinking. But there is definitely some ways though to still do space marines in a very space marine-y way for someone like me with a 3D printer. You may have to buy more individual bits or like pieces of the STLs and then, you know, obviously like glue them together. But honestly, at that point, it feels much like putting a sprue together. And honestly, actually, most prints and STLs that you get for these models will come in parts. It's not like the whole model printing in one as one whole model.
Right. It's actually very rare to find that. That way.
It's very rare to find it without it being still a very like put your stuff together kind of model.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I think it's great to think about ways to experiment, because the reality is though, the 40K universe is a quite vast universe. And there are many, 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 a great number of, I mean, look at kitbashes people have done even of space marines that honestly look incredibly different from the main design of one. So there are a great number of options out there for any faction. And I think you can always do so. And 3D printing will absolutely let you do so and give you the freedom to kind of do that as you wish for far less money. Like I pointed, and this is one place I really want to get to. Just to kind of close this out, as I mentioned, I recently put together, and I haven't painted it yet, but I've at least printed and put together a proxy for a castigator. So this is, if you buy it from GW, a $90 model. That's a fair bit of shekels.
Yes.
This STL that I got that looks pretty dang close to what I feel like a castigator looks like. So it's like I'm clearly not deceiving anyone. Was $10. And I can print it as many times as I want. So for the price of one castigator model from GW, well, not even, that math doesn't technically work, but I could have 9 castigators and still have paid only a ninth of the price of a
right.
of a single castigator from GW. That's mm-hmm. my number one reason why you should consider 3D printing. And it's 100% the reason that everybody should do it, because more importantly, it tells GW that their prices are ridiculous and they need to put them down. And the only way we'll ever do that is by not buying their models as much and 3D printing them. Legally, I'm talking about legally distinct versions. Cover those bases. You should print the legally distinct and fair use models that are up to code, but still print them. Anyway, that's going to do it for this episode. Any last minute questions before we go?
When all is said and done, what do you think the future of 3D printing is going to look like in the next few years here? Where do you think 3D printing in the, we can keep it to just models, because obviously that's like mm-hmm. a huge question to ask about 3D printing entirely. But in terms of 3D printing for models, what do you think the future of that is going to look like? Do you think we're going to continue to see, do you think it's going to continue to become easier and easier to print more detailed models? Or is it going to be something of being able to print more of them quickly? You know, are we going to see like efficiency versus accuracy and detail? Like, where do you think the trajectory of 3D printing for models is kind of heading from this point?
I think that's dependent a little bit between the resin versus FDM issues. Like for resin, I mean, they've really have come down to where now it is just about efficiency. And because honestly, like, I don't know how any more than a 9K screen, right, resolution screen is gonna I don't know how much more you're gonna get in terms of detail. I think the other thing is just gonna end up being efficiency, and if anything, maybe new designs to help with the ease of handling said resin. Otherwise, for FDM, it's just, yeah, it's going to 100% just become, it's going to be about those things getting more detailed and faster, finding a way to make it faster. That's because that's FDM's number one thing, right? Like, so many of their prints will take like 8 to 10 hours for like a model the size of a Terminator, you know? So it's like, you are, you know, like for them, it's just speed. But then the only, obviously everything else then is just going to become price. It's just, everything's going to, they're going to continue to get cheaper, more accessible. And then games like Trench Crusade that pretty much holistically live off of you either buying 3D printed models or printing them yourself, either or, and then you go play the game on your own, are what's going to like get you going, you know?
Yeah.
So like for me, everything is just going to end up coming down to more and more accessibility. I think that is really just going to be like the number one thing.
Cool.
But yeah, no, otherwise that'll do it for this episode. So I kind of got to acknowledge it in the editing, but we had the Emperor's Children reveal prior to the recording of this episode. I have a reaction to it on my own channel. There was a lot of cool Emperor's Children stuff revealed. And also that what we were kind of told is that they'll be coming relatively soon. In fact, most likely we'll be looking at March for that Emperor's Children release.
That's right around the corner.
Yeah. And like I kind of alluded to, that may not necessarily mean that you should go out and buy all those Emperor's Children models. Probably shouldn't. But what it does mean is we'll get new lore. We'll learn about what that Fulgrim guy has been up to and what he's doing.
Tasty, juicy lore.
Yes. And how he's bringing the band back together, because the Emperor's Children are pretty disjointed at the moment. But I need to give you those details. So, how has your Fulgrim research been going?
I genuinely tried to see if I could secure a physical copy of Fulgrim.
Yeah.
I reached out to several libraries in my network.
Yes.
Of like the neighboring cities and everything. And unfortunately, it really truly is just like is not available anywhere. So I have had to concede. I am taking the L. I'm going to be reading it on Kindle. I'll be using my e-reader to read up on Fulgrim,
which I had opened it at one point that I was willing to mail it to you if you wish to, but you were also set on the like Easter egg hunt.
I was the thrill of the chase, you know, exactly. The thrill of the chase was really important to me.
And I think it'll be good to just have it on your e-reader. But all right. So I'm guessing you've at least begun.
Yes, I did start.
All right. So yeah, so you'll let me know how that is. I mean, pretty much honestly, we're going to try. I would say our goal for looking into that Fulgrim episode. Sorry. Looking into that Fulgrim episode is going to be somewhere near the end of February.
Yeah, that's
so
about right.
Kind of in that span, you know, should be well enough before the actual range comes out. But before, I mean, maybe there's a possibility it could come out within the next month, but we'll see. It'll be within the window enough, right? We'll figure that out. But otherwise, you know, we'll get all in on Fulgrim. If it comes out before... If we do the episode and it does come out before the new Fulgrim book releases, right? Then we will do the episode that's the leading up to where they were, and then we'll do a small update on where they are. And that will kind of base on, I guess, whether or not maybe both of us do the book, get the book, we could do a book club. Otherwise, that'll be kind of a play it by ear type thing. But if that book comes out before you finish Fulgrim and we do the episode, then I will do my studying up on what needs to be put into the episode. And we will add the current stuff into the Emperor's Children Fulgrim episode.
Gotcha.
which honestly, that episode will mostly be about Fulgrim. Because if you couldn't guess, the guy who's obsessed with perfection and known for his complete and total self-absorption has a real carte blanche on the lore of his legion. Because we're not going to talk a whole lot. The technical other person that has taken that is Fabius Bile. We're not going to talk a whole lot about him. Because he's really in his own league. He'll obviously come up because he's important to the history. But he's not going to be a focus. We would divert way too much. But yes, other than that, I don't know what we'll do next week. I have to make a final decision on that. But that's a thing to look forward to in the future. We are going to be doing that big... the big Emperor's Children and Fulgrim episode near the end of February. Other than that, thank you so much for listening or watching. We'll see you next week with whatever we do talk about. And until then, have a good one.
Goodbye, goodbye.